86 Valencia is a writing center. We teach writing to kids. All of our programming is free. So this seminar series that we offer once a month is to help fundraise for that free student programming. My name is Lee Lehman. I'm the development director here. And the kinds of programming we do for kids, we have drop-in tutoring here after school for all subject areas. We send volunteers into the school system to work with teachers in their classrooms. We host classes here in the morning for field trips. And we do a lot of student publishing. Some of our books are larger publications like this. We do a book once a year. We partner with a school. And this book, Amy Tan helped us with. It's a book of oral histories that the students put together and worked incredibly hard on and got to learn, you know, just how much blood, sweat, and tears it takes to publish something. And then we also do other types of publishing, smaller chapbooks with students and stuff like that. This is a book we put together this year that's all writing lesson plans for teachers and others who are interested in teaching writing. And this was put together by a lot of our best workshop teachers who teach workshops here in the evening, as well as some of our favorite authors like Amy Ender and Sarah Vowell and Dave Eggers, who is our founder, and also the founder of Mixed Minis Publishing. And then we also sometimes do smaller publications like this. This is, some of you may have seen this around town. This is the San Francisco Literary Map that we published last fall. It's actually framed back there on the wall. It's a great resource. It shares a lot of information about bookstores and literary sites across the city. Tonight we have a fantastic panel, as you all well know, which is why you are here. Don George is our moderator. He is the global travel editor of Lonely Planet and is the editor and writer of many esteemed publications. So we're very, very happy to have him here. I will let him introduce the rest of our panel. Just so you have a little sense of how the evening will go, we'll talk for about an hour, hour and a half. About halfway through, we'll have a break. You have a chance to stretch, move around a little bit, and also the panelists will sort of spread out across the room, so you'll have a chance to talk with them one-on-one and ask any specific questions that you don't get a chance to with a large group. Then we'll reconvene for the second half of the evening and talk some more, and the seminar will end at 9. During the break and at the end are also a good time for you to look around the Pirate Store. Some of our authors here have books here that are for sale in the store. You can get it signed and buy it in the Pirate Store if that interests you. Are there any questions right now? Okay, then I'm going to turn things over to Don. Don, thank you.
Thanks, Lee. Well, it's nice to see you all. Thanks for coming out today. And I just wanted to start by saying on behalf of all of us that it's really a pleasure to be here in support of a really, really tremendous community organization and an organization that does tremendous programs for that everybody benefits from. So we're all really pleased to be here. And keep up the good work, 826. It's great. I'll introduce the panelists and then I'm going to be asking questions, and we'll have sort of a free-flowing conversation for about an hour or so, and then I'm going to open the floor up to questions from you. So if you can keep your questions until that time, that would be great. On my immediate left, Amanda Jones is a prolific freelance writer and photographer, and she's also been an editor in the past, but now she mostly writes, I believe. Less photography, more writing. Mm-hmm. Her work has been published in lots of magazines and newspapers here and abroad. And she right now is working on a new book. John Flynn is the executive travel editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. Many years ago, I was the travel editor at what was then called the Examiner and Chronicle, when they were published together. And when I was leaving, the paper did a thorough nationwide search for someone great to take over the job. and John was chosen to take my place, and he does a tremendous job as travel editor at the Chronicle. Larry Habiger is the co-founder of the Traveler's Tales books. I hope you're all aware of those. They're really wonderful books that are companions to traditional guidebooks. They bring together literary stories about countries are grouped around themes, or the new books, the best travel writing books. They give narrative, wonderful narrative travel writing a very distinguished home. So it's And Larry is the executive editor.
That's right.
Of Traveler's Tales. And Elaine Lee is another prolific freelance writer based in the Bay Area, has written for many newspapers and magazines, and also is the editor of this wonderful book called Go Girl, the Black Woman's Book of Travel and Adventure, and has been based in the Bay Area for
28 years.
But writes for publications here and all over the place. So I thought I would begin by asking the panelists something I have a feeling you're all curious about, which is how they got started, how they got their break. So I'll just start with Amanda and work the way down, but then we'll develop into more of a conversational mode. But Amanda, how did you get started as a writer, as an editor?
Yeah, the hard way, the long way. I, without boring you, I have a degree in neurophysiology, and I thought I wanted to be a neurophysiologist. They know me too well and realized that that was not in the cards for me. I decided that I didn't want to spend my life in a lab, so I thought, I know, I'll be in fashion. I always loved clothes. I thought fashion. I went to work in fashion, and it was a disaster. But it did end up that I worked for Vogue magazine for two. It just so happened I got a job at Vogue magazine in Australia, and so that got me into publishing. And although I decided fashion was another thing that wasn't for me, I was a disaster in the fashion world. I did find my true love, which was writing. So in a way, it was a long, hard road. But in another way, I feel very fortunate because I came from the inside out. And after many years of going through different magazines as an editor, I went freelance about 15 years ago. And I decided, well, I don't want to work for anybody else. I'm sick of working for other people. What can I do with my life? And I thought, well, I love to write. I'm okay at writing. And I really love to travel. And that was an addiction I've always had all my life. I'm a New Zealander. It seems to run in our DNA to be addicted to travel. And so I decided to give it a shot at wedding those two things. And I really started again. I started from the bottom. I moved back to America and just clawed my way up. And it's been a really wonderful, wonderful career. So that's how but I did have my first clips published while I was working on stuff with other magazines. So.
Okay. John?
I was a writer long before I did any traveling. I always wanted to be a journalist and wrote for my high school newspaper and college newspaper and edited my college magazine. And I'd been writing professionally for newspapers for quite a few years before I actually ever got on a plane and ever traveled anywhere. Actually, New Zealand was the first place I ever went. So really, I'm sort of a writer who got into travel rather than a traveler who got into writing, which I think is maybe a good way to do it. But anyway, I was hired by the San Francisco Examiner and was a colleague of Don's for quite a few years and bounced around from various departments, mostly news and feature writing, but I briefly covered the World Cup for the sports. The sports editor called me in and said, now, John, you've been to Europe, right? I'm like, yeah. He says, have you ever seen a soccer game? I'm like, yeah. He says, okay, you're covering the World Cup. None of the other sports writers knew the first thing about soccer. But anyway, so I like to think I'm versatile anyway. But anyway, I carved out a niche writing feature stories. We call them Sunday thumb suckers. It was long things in the Sunday paper that you think, oh, that looks pretty interesting. I'll have to get around to reading that. And then you put it out on the stack, and it's gone. But anyway, and then in the midst of all that, I took a year off to travel around the world, do the little backpacker thing. And I was older than most. I was 30. And when I got back, I wrote a few articles for Don. And then a couple of years later, I did it again and wrote a few more articles for Don when he was editing the travel section. And then people usually die in these jobs. They don't really leave them. But Don decided to leave. And everybody on the, you know, despite the nationwide search, which I think maybe making two phone calls, but everybody at the paper applied for his job. And it somehow came down to between me and the guy who was the assistant business editor. It was just a brilliant guy who's since gone on to win a Pulitzer Prize. And he'd taken a leave of absence too, and he'd gone off to the University of Missouri to study some important journalism topics. And I'd basically just goofed off and traveled around the world, and they just said, oh, you look like you got the kind of experience. And I think Phil Brownstein's, I think his exact words were, well, you've been boring everybody around here with your travel story for a long time. Now you can bore a wider audience. Anyway, that's how I got here.
How many of you guys read the Sunday Chronicle travel section? How many of you? Well, I want to ask him that. I don't know if you read John's column, but John's column, I think, is a wonderful, wonderful example of great travel writing. He writes wonderful topical essays every week, or almost every week, and almost without fail, they're really entertaining. So if you're not reading him, pick him up at least once a month, because I think you'll find that you really enjoy his writing. How did I get started? My story is a little different. Of course, everybody's story is different. I got out of college, and I was determined to be a great novelist. So I was writing novels. Actually, I wrote a novel in my last year in college, and then I was writing another one. It took me a couple of years. I did the time-honored writer's thing. I got jobs in bars. So I was a nighttime bartender, so I'd have my days free to write. So I spent a lot of years serving whiskey at night and then writing during the day. And after completing the second novel, neither of which of these two novels was really any good, I did what John did. I got out of town. I took an extended trip around the world, did the backpacker thing, and discovered in my travels that, A, I'd love to travel, and B, I was doing what everybody does when they travel. I was writing journal entries, and I discovered that I found that form of writing to be really appealing. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than the struggle of writing long fiction. So while I was traveling, I began sending stories back. I would try to craft them into stories, and I sent them back to a friend who said, oh, yeah, I'll send them around for you, it's no problem. And so while I was traveling, one of my stories got picked up in New York Newsday, and I thought, wow, this is possible to do. You can actually travel, and you can write about travel, and you can sell it, and people read it and like it. When I got back, I talked to the editor, and he said, oh, yeah, I remember that story. It had been several months. I said, yeah, that was a really nice piece of writing. So I thought, there's a chance here. So I continued doing my nighttime bartending, and once I was back, much more freelance writing, and was doing some travel stuff, but doing just general essays and general feature writing, trying to make my way up into the world, trying to break into the higher level newspapers and magazines. And that was difficult. It's a tough road, freelancing is. But I took another sort of left turn in this process and decided in about 1981, 82 to concoct a mystery series and propose it to the newspaper. Armistead Maupin was writing Tales of the City at the time, and I got talking with a good friend of mine with whom I started doing some work together. We started doing some travel writing and joint bylines and stuff. His name is James O'Reilly, and he and I thought, why don't we create a new Sam Spade to give the Examiner some way to compete with Armistead Maupin and Tales of the City? So we came up with this idea. We scribbled, we plotted it all out, and we took it over to the Examiner. And almost unbelievably, the Examiner said, "Hey, this is a good idea. Let's do it." So we ended up writing a novel serialized over 104 episodes for the what was the Scene section of the Examiner at the time. And this was before you took over the travel section, right? When did you take over? About 83 or 84?
86.
Okay. Yeah. This was 82 when we ran this mystery novel. It turned out that the editor who bought our mystery novel, who we dealt with on a daily basis doing this serial, was the boss of the travel editor. And I said to her, well, gee, Pam, how do I break into the travel section here? I've been having a tough time. She said, oh, well, give it to me. I'll just tell them to run it.
All right.
Oh, all right. So there was my big break. I sideways, as I say, I ended up writing fiction, and I'd never written mysteries before. The novels I'd written was they were just sort of straight fiction. But I ended up writing this novel with James O'Reilly, and we ended up getting to know the boss of the travel editor, and then everything that we wrote went into the travel section. So that was how.
That's like that. And
then when Don came over, he said, "This guy sucks. He's out of here." So
that's not true.
So in any case, that was how I kind of got travel writing going, and then a few years later concocted this idea for a syndicated column called World Travel Watch. It was a time, 86, of significant hijacking for, you know, terrorist hijacking for political reasons. And James and I created this World Travel Watch column that was an update of just advisories of things that have happened around the world that would affect travel. And that is still running. In fact, John and the Chronicle run selections from it every week. It's on the inside, page 2. So I had this little burgeoning freelance business going, but it was really hard. No matter how hard you work it and how much you push it, it's always difficult. So I began looking for something where I could get on the other side of the table rather than being the freelancer, get on the other side of the table and be the editor. Turned out that the guy I was working with, James O'Reilly, his brother Tim O'Reilly, has a very successful computer publishing company. And he was looking for ways to kind of expand from what he was doing. And he and James got to talking, and he said, let's look into what's missing in travel publishing. So that created this round-robin, three-way conversation about what was missing. We felt that the collections of books in a series like a guidebook, but stories by many different authors. So you get people's real, you know, real insides, and you get people's deep experience in story form, was what was missing in travel publishing. So we created Traveler's Tales, started that book publishing company, and I've been doing it now for the past 12 years, and that's principally what I do now. So I went from trying to write fiction to writing travel, discovering I loved it, suddenly writing some fiction that actually worked. And that gave me a lead into a better travel writing setup, created a column, and then got tired of freelancing and was in a position to be able to create this publishing company. And that's what we're doing today. So.
All right.
Elaine? Okay, thank you. Well, travel is the music of my soul. There's just nothing on the planet that makes me, I think, happier to be alive. I experience so much magic when I travel, and it's a wonderful opportunity to connect with Mother Earth and her inhabitants. And this love just motivated me. It's like, how can I make travel a permanent part of my life? And I said, well, you know, I love to travel. I love to write, as Amanda was saying, and I guess I'll be a travel writer. I just had this bright idea as I was on a 17-hour flight coming back from Indonesia. And so then I came back, and I remembered that I had met this woman who was a travel writer, and I called her and asked her if she would be my mentor, and she agreed to do that. And then she invited me to join the Bay Area Travel Writers Club, and so I got a chance to start meeting other travel writers. And then I took classes at Book Passages. They have an annual travel writing photography conference. And in those days, it was just $85. Now it's like $600. But anyway, I think my first teacher was Don. I think I actually took classes from him. Wow. And that was in 95 or 94, something like that. And so after that, so I read travel writing books. You know, And I started writing articles and just sending them around and seeing how I would do. And I didn't do very well. It was heartbreaking, actually, at first, but I kept at it. And one of my friends had started feeling sort of sorry for me because I had been trying so hard and not getting anywhere. And I was telling her that, you know, one of the things that frustrated me when I was planning my first solo trip around the world, it was just so hard to plan this trip. And it just took me like 5 months to get everything all together. And I said, maybe there needs to be a guidebook on how to plan a trip around the world. So I had kind of put that together and with some other ideas. And she said, well, why don't we try to do a book together? She was an accomplished author. And she said, I have a friend who has a travel book company up in Oregon. Let's pitch her a story, an idea for a book. And so she and I put together a book proposal and sent it to her friend. And her friend said, great idea. I'll give it a whirl. So that's how I got my first book deal, was through a friend. So, you know, it helps to know folks. So get out there and ask for what you want, you know, and you know, have a body of work if you can. I think that's really a good idea to, you know, write, even if you have to write for free, you know, just to get published and get a little, some kind of track record going. So anyway, so I got my book deal. My book came out, and then after that, I started taking chapters of that and sending it around, and then I started doing freelance travel writing more after that. And then from that, some travel television, and then after that in travel radio. So I've kind of had an opportunity to experience this whole travel world in a lot of different venues. So that's kind of how I got started.
That's great. Thanks. I'll tell you how I got started, too. I actually, when I was going to college, I wanted to be a poet. That was what I thought I'd do for a living. And when I graduated and all my friends were going off to graduate school and medical school and law school and working for banks and things, all the really practical things, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I postponed it by getting a fellowship to go teach in Greece for a year. So I went to Athens. And on my way to Athens, I stopped off in Paris because I had a three-month internship in Paris. So I lived in Paris for 3 months. And then I went to Greece for a nine-month fellowship. And in the course of that year, I just fell in love with being in a foreign country and how when you walk down into the street in Paris and you're surrounded by Frenchness all around you, people are speaking French, everything's written in French, the air is French, the perfume is French. That was incredibly intoxicating for me. And I had been planning to go back to graduate school and study like French literature. And I just thought, why would I go to graduate school to study France when I could like be in Paris and study France? So I decided to try to make travel a part of my life somehow or other. But I was still writing poetry and I was doing journaling, like Larry said. And after a year in Greece, I went to creative writing school in the US for a year and got a master's degree in creative writing. And then decided to postpone my life decisions for two more years, and I got a fellowship to go to Japan. I lived in Japan for 2 years and taught at a university in Tokyo. And that was when I really decided I needed to merge travel and writing somehow or other. And I got really lucky before I went to Japan. I wrote to a bunch of editors in New York and said, I'm going to go live in Japan for 2 years, and I thought maybe you'd like to have a Tokyo-based correspondent. And these were magazines like The New Yorker and Harper's and The Atlantic Monthly. And they wrote back to me letters like, thank you very much, but we already have three Pulitzer Prize winners in Tokyo. So probably we're not going to need your services, but you know, have a good 2 years. But a few places wrote back and said, if you're going to be in New York before you go to Japan, stop by. We'd love to talk with you. So I immediately invented a trip to New York and called these people up and said, you know, what a surprise, I am going to be in New York, as a matter of fact, from like August 2 to August 20. So if you have any time between those dates, we could meet. So I got to see a bunch of editors that way, and I brought a nonfiction article that I'd written in graduate school about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro with me as a writing sample, and I just would leave it with the editors after I met with them and said, you know, this is just a writing sample. You know, read it whenever you can. And thank you very much. And when I arrived in Tokyo, there was a telegram from Mademoiselle magazine saying, a hole opened up in our November issue and we put your Kilimanjaro story in it. Hope you don't mind. So that was how I got my first piece of nonfiction published. And I'd been writing poetry for decades and gotten, you know, nothing published. And I thought, maybe there's something to this nonfiction idea. So that's when that inspired me to start writing more and more nonfiction. And it's a long, long story that I won't go into, but I came back to the States and ended up through a bunch of serendipities meeting the person who was the travel editor at the Examiner then, who was taking a year's leave of absence. And I ended up being interviewed for her job, and everybody from the janitor to the publisher interviewed me, and they hired me. So I took her job for a year, and that really got me started professionally travel writing. Moved on to different jobs after that, but the Examiner travel writing job was my first real professional job. So I'm not sure what the moral of that story is, but that's how I got started. We're going to focus on the craft of writing for the first part of this. So I thought I would ask everybody a question about how you find a story, how you come up with what you think is a good story, a story that somebody will publish, that's worth publishing. And I'll just kind of throw it out and see who wants to answer that first.
Silence. We're still looking.
Well, I can weigh in and say, okay. For me, it's where I want to go. I'm very selfish now. At this stage, it's of my career, it's more about where is it that I'm interested in? It used to be that I'd take assignments where I wasn't really that interested. A couple of golfing stories or something. I don't know anything about golf, but you know, you take them to pay your dues. But now it's what fascinates me. And I think over the years, when you are travel writing, you discover what your passions are, and so therefore you're able to really focus. And you don't know that until you start to travel and start to write. And what I found was that some stories, when I had to sit down and actually write them, came so much more easily than others. Hmm. And I realized that was because I had a passion for the place or for the people or for the culture or for what I had just done. Whereas if I'd had gone somewhere that didn't interest me very much, it was like writing in blood. You know, it was just... And so I decided that I really needed to focus on what I was passionate about. And strangely enough, many years ago, I discovered that I was really fascinated in tribes and in very remote tribes. So I spent many, many years traipsing off to the most remote places on earth to be with the tribes. And it just was a very strange passion that I discovered in myself. And so I would urge you, none of you are terribly, you know, you're not teenagers, so you probably have had some experience with what really lights your fire. And I would follow that. I would listen to that within yourself. And, you know, some people love Paris. I'm not a city person. That's very tragic. I really thought I was. I fancied myself quite the urbanite. But I'm not. I'm really not. I get into cities. I don't like them. I don't enjoy them. I don't write about them. So if I get a call to write about a city, I say, don't ask me, ask someone else. So really listen to yourself. That's very general advice, but that would be what I say because that's what I follow.
Okay. I'm sort of in a weird position because I'm both an editor and a writer, and I'm sort of put my editor hat on, take it off. But I mean, the nice part is I get to sort of assign myself to go places. But on the other hand, I sort of have the responsibility of trying to put out a section that gives the readers what it is they want. And as you probably know, people in the Bay Area travel more than anybody in the country. It's sort of ironic. We live in this area. Everybody wants to come visit, and we're all desperate to get out and go somewhere else. But you know, the people who read my section, I know it has to be fairly sophisticated coverage. And so as an editor, I'm sort of methodically go through this. I mean, to be honest, about once a year, I just pick some place I want to go, whether we need a story on it or not. And instead of, since I'm picking the story, I get to decide what goes into the paper, then we'll run that. But mostly I'm sort of methodically looking at either what is a really cool undiscovered place that people... you know, maybe it's going to be the next big thing. You know, a few years ago it might have been Croatia. Last year I went to Tasmania, which I think it's still a few years away, but I think it's going to be a really cool place. I might go to Bulgaria this summer, which everyone's talking up as the next big thing. I don't know. But anyway, so I try to sort of hopefully get there before the masses and let people know, you know, what the next big thing is. Or if it's a place that's well known, I have to find an angle on it that is new, is fresh. Like I had a story today about Lahaina in Maui, which didn't used to be one of my favorite places. I eventually got to learn to like it. But obviously you can't just say, hey, you know, there's a town in Maui, check it out. You know, you've got to have something else. So I sort of focused on, if you hate Lahaina, here's some things you can do to sort of find that you actually like it, and some things that most people don't do. So I'm sort of always looking for angles like that anyway. And so I guess because I'm traveling all on company dime and usually going in for a limited amount. When I travel for work, it's not really like real travel. I mean, it's like a business trip. I sort of parachute into some place and spend 48 hours there and leave. So I'm very focused on just getting what I need for my story. So it's a little different than I think other people that just sort of travel and take a few notes. I'm sort of, you know, very focused on the story anyway.